Welcome to a Saturday afternoon here, hanging out, getting ready for the big barbecues coming up on Father's Day, of course. And let me just ahead of time say happy Father's Day to all the dads out there. And to my dads in the studio, and we've got plenty of dads here. We got Mr. Gary Baker. Good to have you here.
Thank you. Happy Father's Day to you.
That's right. Ed Rudell as well.
Always great to be here.
Good.
Got guys scrubbed all the grease out of my fingernails. I'm ready to work.
All right. And we also have Mr. Cal Carson, who is with us. Delighted to have you back, by the way.
It's so good to be back. And if you had to grind grease out of your hands, you've been working.
Yeah. Well, I know you did an oil change, too, but I did struts and ball joints. So.
Oh, my word. God.
I had to do it before Father's Day, because tomorrow I'm sitting around the
house. Right.
All day.
Wear your crown, around the house, eat the barbecue that's been prepared for you.
God, that sounds good. Nothing like a good old steak on the grill, man.
There you go. Hey, folks, let me give you the phone number again. We've got some folks starting to line up, and that's the way we want to have it. We're going to be answering your questions during this hour about your computer at 800-859-0957. That's 800-859-0957. WJR. Before we get there, however, we got Mr. Mike Brennan with us. And Mr. Mike Brennan is the editor of MI Tech News. And Mike, good to have you here. How you doing?
Doing great, Foster, and happy Father's Day to everybody.
Hey, what, you got plans for Father's Day, of course?
Just going to chill out. My kids are on either coast, so one's in Seattle and one's in New Jersey. So I'm just going to lay by the pool and drink some cervezas and that sort of thing.
You know, for some reason, because we live in Michigan, when you say they're out on the other coast, I'm thinking Lake Huron and Lake Michigan.
I did too.
Yeah, a little further away.
Okay.
Yeah.
And a little bigger body of water.
Those are shores.
Well, Mike, let's give folks a little bit of a sampling of the things that they could be getting free for themselves every Friday through MI Tech News. And by the way, you can go to mitechnews.com anytime on the internet and find the information that Mike gathers from the technology world and entrepreneurial world. But one of the things that I saw in your headlines was that 600 million Samsung Galaxy smartphones might be vulnerable to a cyber attack.
Yeah, that pre-installed software you get on the phone, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. The SwiftKey keyboard software, not so good.
Oh.
600 million phones are open. They include the Galaxy S6, 5, 4, and 4 Mini.
Oh, my
yeah.
word.
So, but according to Samsung, they're going to fix this.
Well, I was reading up on that later this morning, and basically Samsung released the patch on that last January. They're waiting for the cellular providers to actually push it.
Oh, that's the problem.
Yeah, they're waiting for the carriers to push it. Samsung said, sorry, we patched that and gave it to our carriers.
Mea culpa, right?
Oh, man. That is the problem so often, is that your phone software may have a great patch or an upgrade or whatever, but you got to wait for it to come through the providers.
Well, the other thing is, too, is Google doesn't release patches for older units because, I mean, their whole take on it is basically, you know, we give it to the manufacturers and Android and other companies like that, and then they modify the operating system. It's up to them to patch it.
Yeah.
Gee, I thought you were going to say that their idea was you patch it by buying the new one.
I was going to say, that's what I thought
would
be.
That's what they prefer, right?
Yes.
You know? or just download and install the new operating system.
Yeah, if you can get hold of it. And sometimes that is the problem. Well, one of the other headlines I saw here, and I'd like to use this, Mike, if we could, for you to talk about some of the other elements that you provide through MI Tech News, and that is the Digital Divas episode number 8 is out, and that's Rising Up with Kate Catlin and Sue Shade, or Shade. I don't know what the pronunciation of those names is, but it's talk a little bit about the Digital Divas and about their being included in MI Tech News.
Yeah, they're just one of 8 content partners that we have, just one. You guys, of course, are one. There's a whole bunch of others, but in this case, they're talking about a Woman Rising group, which is going to be a networking group for women in tech. That's what these three ladies really get into. Obviously, they're all women in tech themselves. And so we're trying to promote that, trying to get a little diversity out there. Because if you look at the numbers, women in tech still are less than 20% on average. in most professions, at least technical professions. And I know that's a really big thing. They're trying to get more women into the different professions.
Absolutely. So. By the way, I mentioned that, folks, because with MI Tech News, and that, by the way, this is absolutely free to come to you. It's not just, if you will, hard news articles about what's going on in entrepreneurial things or technology, et cetera. But now there are tremendous resources. You can listen to our program, our full podcast of 2 hours. IT and the D is there. The Digital Divas. There's a whole lot that's there for you besides, if you will, the usual kind of hard news. Mike has branched out, and there's all sorts of things that are developing there, which makes it a great value, and especially since you don't pay a penny for it. But what you can do is either go to mitechnews.com, the website for the show, for the news, or go to our website, internetadvisor.net. That's internetadvisor.net. Scroll down the page, and there's a subscribe now button. Simply click on that right next to Mike's smiling face, and you are then going to be putting in your email address, and after that, it's all done. You don't have to pay a single thing. And every Friday, all sorts of interesting news about technology going on throughout the state, entrepreneurship, sometimes international information, as well as these other great resources, including Mr. Matt Rausch and the Engineering Society of Detroit, and many of the things that he's got going there as well are going to be available to you. Mike, thanks so much for providing that for us and for our audience, and good luck to you as you continue developing that, and don't eat too many ribs this weekend.
No, I drink too many beers for that matter, right?
There you go. Mike Brennan is the editor of MI Tech News. All right, folks, we've got Perry from Port Huron who's standing by, and we're going to be getting into his question. What's your question for us? 800-859-0957. Thank you for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. As I said, by the way, this is kind of the good advice continuing on WJR. It starts with great home improvements with Glenn Hagee, goes through the afternoon. Dr. Dean Krauskopf helps you with your garden, and here we are to help you with your computers. Now, shame on you if you don't call and get that question answered that you had out there. Inevitably, towards the end of the program, we have all sorts of people calling. Now is a good time to give us a call, and Perry will be with you in just a moment. But the number is 800-859-0957. And this is where you go to ask about how do I get into, let's say, safe mode on Windows 8.1. A question that that Ed and I were discussing just before. But whatever it may be, your email has a problem or you've got problems with a certain device you're working with, now is the time for you to call. And we got some people in here who are very, very experienced who would love to help you. 800-859-0957. Let's go out to Perry in Port Huron. Hi, Perry. Welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Well, hey, guys. It's Harry here. Got a hopefully an easy one for you.
Okay.
We like easy ones.
Yeah, exactly. I'm using Windows 7, okay. And I want to get speech recognition going, and I want to turn it on. I've trained it already a couple days ago, but now when I go to turn it on, it will not turn on. Like if I go to Windows and I type in the word speech, for example, it says Windows speech recognition, and I hit enter. I don't hear the noises, the beep noises that it's on. If I hit Control Windows key, I don't hear anything, so I can't turn it on to activate it.
We should mention, by the way, that Harry, who is a frequent caller here, and I'm so glad you called in, is visually handicapped, and so you really count on that speech recognition. It's very important for you to have that.
Well, it is, because I've got a 12-page Braille document I need to read, and if I have to read it and then type it and then feel down another line of text, that's going to take me about a month to do that.
Oh, yeah. Okay, let's see, guys, if we can unravel this.
Well, you know, I don't have any, it's been years since I've messed with Windows speech recognition.
Have you set up the microphone? Because, you know, you do have to set that up. Okay. Yep. I know you've trained it, but I wondered if you'd...
No, that's a good question, Gary. Yeah, I did.
Yeah, is there any sounds at all coming from your computer?
Oh, yeah. I've got my speech. I can hear that. I've got... Everything else works on it.
Okay. But for some reason, just the speech recognition component fails to initialize.
I have three other friends here in town that have tried it on theirs computers, and they could see, but they tried it on theirs, and they couldn't activate it on theirs either. So I don't... there must be something I'm missing.
Wait, is this the function that reads the text, Ed? Is that what you were talking about?
No, this is speech to text, I believe, is what...
Yes. All you're talking to it.
Oh,
right.
Oh, I see. You're dictating to it. Yeah. I see. You're dictating.
So,
I got it.
You know, yeah. It has two different activation modes. One is a manual activation mode. The other uses voice activation.
Okay.
Do you know if that's where maybe? Because, there might be something in the setup, or it might possibly just be a problem with the computer.
He did say that he pressed the Windows, the Windows control key that turns it on, or are you supposed to get the activation?
Windows control key. Mm-hmm. Or control Windows, yes.
Or control Windows.
So you did the manual activation. So
and, that, and that's not even responding to that.
Nope.
If I
tell it to start listening, it doesn't say it doesn't respond either.
Ah.
Yeah. Now, of course, you did try rebooting.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Now, I'm hoping that some of our listeners out there that have experienced this will be able to call in because, I'm drawing a complete blank in this. I really have not troubleshoot this since 2003, since Windows first introduced it with Windows.
Yeah, and it's getting
XP.
Better and better.
It is.
Oh, it's wonderful these days. It's 99% about that now. But,
and this is the native Windows application we're talking about.
It's not Dragon.
Not Dragon. Okay.
No, it's Cantata, right?
What now?
I think it's Cantata.
Well, it is with Windows.
It is with Windows 10 or Windows 8.
Yes, with Windows 10.
Oh, but not 7.
Not 7.
Okay.
Yeah, in
7
it's contorted.
All right. Now.
It is on Harry's machine.
All right.
Oh, Harry. Well, okay. You know what, folks? This is one of those cases where we're going to put a plea out for it. There are a lot of other blind and visually handicapped folks out there who might have an answer to this.
Well, and all the rest of us, too.
That's right.
Absolutely.
If you know how to activate speech recognition, folks, we need you.
Okay. Right. Okay. Very good.
And you did say you attempted to run through the entire wizard again, right? A second time. Because one of the things that it does, I'm looking at it right now because I brought up this Windows speech recognition.
Okay.
And it said basically to me, Windows the speech recognition will not be enabled unless you completed the wizard.
Huh. Yeah, as a matter of fact, I trained it 3 times.
Okay, just wanted to make sure.
No, I'm glad you asked.
That's a very good point to work your way all the way through it. Okay, Harry, we're going to see if we can get an answer for you, okay?
All right, my friend. Hey, guys, thanks for everything. You're all great.
You're welcome.
Hey,
thank you very much.
Harry.
He's been a faithful listener. I know there are a lot of folks out there who count on this speech recognition, whether they happen to be visually handicapped or not. No. I know doctors who use it after a patient visit.
Oh, I love it on my phone. I love it on my iPad.
Exactly. I have it on my, on my phone. I use it most of the time when I'm dictating a message.
Yeah. Well, okay. I like it most when I'm in my kitchen. When I say, hey, can I get some Oreos? And they disappear.
No, I'm sorry.
That's Siri.
That's, yeah. All right, 800-859-0957. That's for answers as well as questions.
Yes.
Let's go out to Ernie, who's with us from Taylor. Hi, Ernie. Welcome to the Internet Advisor.
How are you doing?
Good, sir. Thank you. How can we help you?
Oh, I got a problem with trying to defrag my computer.
Okay.
It's coming up. Disk defragmenter cannot start. Because task scheduler service is not running. They said start the task scheduler service and try again. I do that.
Okay.
And I can't get anywhere.
Now, how old is this computer that you have?
How old?
Yeah.
I'm running Windows 7.
Okay. I just wanted to ask, because if you're, and especially if you're a laptop, because a lot of computers that are shipping now come with solid-state hard drives. And with solid-state
hard drives. It is a laptop.
Yeah,
I had no problem. It already started about a month ago.
Okay,
I defrag it on a weekly basis, and no problem at all.
All of a sudden, it stopped. Now, the reason why I'm clarifying that, so you've run it in the past, but it's failing now. But for our listeners out there that have newer laptops, you do not need to run defrag if you have a solid-state hard drive.
Right.
Matter of fact, Windows, Microsoft disables defrag.
Yeah.
So I wanted to get that clarification
That's
out
a good
there.
Point. Yeah.
You know, the other thought possibly is how much free space do you have on that hard drive?
How much free space?
Yeah, if you got a 100 gigabyte hard drive, of the 100 gigabytes, how much of it is used?
Okay, just a minute.
Go to C, over in the directory.
Okay, let's see.
Very
space.
My computer, actually.
Yeah, I got it. I got it. Use space is 42.9 GBs.
And how much? And how much total available space do you have?
Let's see. Free space is 422 gigabytes.
Oh, so he has lots of space.
So it's definitely not a problem. Because sometimes if you run out of free space, you can't defrag it because there's
no that's
room,
a good point. Right? Yeah, you need it.
Yeah, that was great.
The other thing that strikes 10%. Me, too, Ernie, is that why are you defragging as frequently?
Well, to keep it running smooth.
Well, I don't know that you're necessarily accomplishing that by defragging constantly.
No, and besides, Windows 7 automatically does it in the background anyways.
Yeah.
It's supposed to on off hours. Mm-hmm. So you should not have to run defrag that frequently.
Yeah. I understand. I mean, Gary, well, those of us have been using computers for a long time, way back when,
right,
when you had much smaller hard drives, yeah, you had to maximize it, especially as and software got bigger and your hard drives weren't expanding as fast, right, or were very expensive.
And that was the last time I did it.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I haven't done it in years.
I don't think I've defragged.
Yeah, the only time I've really run defrag on my kids' laptops when they come back from college, Thanksgiving, Christmas break.
Good point.
Or when they come back from school and they're going, Dad, my computer's running so slow. Well, after I remove all the viruses and malware, and then I run disk checks, then I run defrag. But I also run a defrag utility guard from Niren's boot CD. I use an external boot CD. That seems to work better.
Try to figure this one out.
Ernie, we're going to give us some more thought and see if we can get back on the other side of the break right now and give you some other thoughts, okay?
Uh-huh.
All right, thank you so much for giving us a call. For the rest of you out there, lines are open right now, 800-859-0957. Getting answers for you on the Internet Advisor. Welcome to the Internet Advisor. 800-859-0957 is the number. I'm chuckling a little bit because we've gotten two stinker calls today. We do have some thoughts, though,
But those are great calls.
They're good.
We just couldn't solve them.
Yeah, and that happens every now and then. We got two in a row.
Well, it's important for us to be able to show the human side.
There we go. Sam, we'll be with you in just a minute, calling in from Harrisburg, Ontario. And by the way, phone lines are open at 800-859-0957. Just 25 minutes left in the show, guys. Come on. The door is open. Give us a call and see if we can help you. Get an easy question in here, please.
So I wonder if we should get to Sam real quickly.
Two things on the defrag. First, you can always open up a Windows command prompt and type in defrag space C:. Okay. Try that. So try it from the command prompt instead of through the graphical interface, the utility. And the other thing is bring up the task scheduler so you can select start, search, type in task scheduler, and you could drill down to, Windows and then defrag and then see if your defrag is scheduled, is enabled. The task defrag is enabled.
Now, can he go back and use system restart?
If he suspects that there's something corrupted on his computer, sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Go back. As a matter of fact,
I would run a scan disk first, or check your disk drive for disk errors. But as frequently as this gentleman was running defrag, I sort of doubt there's any disk errors.
Yeah.
I mean, unless he drop kicked his laptop, and he still has a mechanical hard drive. But I think it's fine. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. System restore would be great.
Sam, welcome from south of the border in Harrisburg, Ontario. Glad to have you here on the Internet Advisor. How can we help you?
Well, I was using Amazon. Mm-hmm. And after I made a purchase, I received basically a message claiming to be from PayPal, so I just ignored it.
Mm.
I made a second purchase. And actually, I canceled the first one and modified the purchase. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I did that, I received the second one. So I said, maybe this is legit.
Mm-mm.
So I tried to. I opened it up and said to click this to fill out this form.
Mm-mm.
And normally I don't do it because I received the two.
Sure.
So anyway, I downloaded it, and then after I downloaded it, I said, So I searched the IP address where it came from. It's someplace in Denmark or the Netherlands.
That's it?
Yeah. So
that's so strange, though.
I ran ESET, my antivirus.
Yeah.
And I ran Malwarebytes, and nothing came up.
Well, I don't...
So this was a phishing attack.
Yeah, it was a phishing attack, right?
Yeah, but how would that be keyed in on his Amazon purchases?
They just look for the packet coming from Amazon.
Unless it was a coincidence.
No. They looked for the packet. They had a
Gary,
sniffer.
Gary, explain what you mean when you say look for the packet.
They had a sniffer. They can't tell what's in the packet, but they can tell it came from Amazon. So what they're doing is they're guessing that if it came from Amazon, it was because of a purchase.
Okay.
And that's what they did.
And what Gary said before, that it was a phishing attack, means that there wasn't necessarily a virus. What they're counting on with a phishing attack is that you'll give them...
Right.
You'll be fooled into giving them the information they want.
They conned you, and that's what they do. They try to do that. In fact, most of the time, the systems are pretty good today, unless somebody doesn't patch something, and there's bad actors out there on the web server side,
right.
but But a lot of times, these breaches come because they've conned somebody.
And matter of fact,
and it's really hard. It's really hard not to get conned sometimes.
By the way, Sam, just for your information and for our listeners as well, if you go to internetadvisor.net, I put on there a sample of a phishing email that I got from something claiming to be Microsoft. And what I did was, like you're saying, I checked the IP address where it says, click here to give me the information. And when I looked at that, it was something like from Denmark.
Yeah, but, you know. But, and you, and it looked pretty darn authentic.
Oh, it looked absolutely
legitimate.
Yeah. It says, you know, well, you can see it, folks, if you go to internetadvisor.net. I just left it in there so you could see what it looked like when it got to me. And then I drew some things on there to show what it really was. So, Sam, what did you download?
You know, I downloaded a file, and I can see it in my library history. But when I do a search, I can't find it.
Now, did you fill out the information?
No, I did. No,
oh, okay. Good.
Some error kind of came up. So what I did is I went to PayPal by myself, independently, made sure it had the HTTPS. Yeah.
Good.
And then I logged in, but then I was worried about, you know, one of those software that reads what you key in?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, keylogger, right.
But when I ran Malwarebytes and when I ran my anti-spyware, anti-virus, nothing came up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do everything you can to get that off your machine. And the fact that you didn't enter any information is a really good thing.
Yeah, right.
I think I might have been fooled by this one. Right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's a pretty...
Yeah.
It seems real logical, right?
Well, as you said, they're sniffing those packets out, so they time it perfectly.
That's possibly what they
did, possibly.
Right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's too much of a coincidence.
Yeah.
Otherwise.
My one question is, how can I find... Because the Yastro file's afx.ms, and when I do a... I'm using Windows 8.1.
Okay.
So when I do a file explorer search, it doesn't come up anywhere, even though I see it in my library history.
Hmm. Any thoughts, guys, on that?
What was the file extension on that?
It's afx.ms.
MS.
Yeah, I just don't recognize that as an extension.
But what you're saying is when you go to look for that with the search function on Windows 8.1, it doesn't find that file.
Yeah, it may not. Windows 8.1, and I'm sure you've already configured it to show hidden in system files. Is that correct? So you go
I'm actually not seeing that option, but let me...
Okay, why don't you tell them how to do that, Ed?
I don't have a Windows system, Windows 8.1 in front of me. I got a Windows 7.1. But usually you go into the folder options that you can right mouse click on any folder, and then on the View tab, which is the same between Windows 8 and Windows 7, that for folder options, you select the View tab. Then you have the ability to show hidden files and system files.
Right. And you want to make sure that those are showing.
Yeah.
Now, this is through File Explorer, correct?
Correct, through File Explorer.
Okay.
I'm
going to try something else. I'm going to try, there's an actual search option in Windows as well, Windows 8.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I'll try that.
Yep, and see if you can find that file.
And if that always fails, what I always do is use the Windows 8.1 bootable rescue and diagnostic flash drive that you create with Windows 8.1, and that actually has an old-fashioned Explorer window on there or a command prompt. And what I've done in the past, you can open up those old command prompts if you remember DOS, and you could still enter those old DOS commands. You go to the root of your C drive and you type in dir/s/v, which means search for hidden in system files
and
subdirectories, and then type in the file name.
Where do I make that? How do I make that? I made a recovery disk, but I that bootable thing you're talking about
the recovery disk is the same thing, I think. Am I right, Ed?
Well, once you create a recovery disk in Windows 8.1, which creates an image, then it creates, it says, do you wish to once you create a backup image of Windows 8.1, it asks you, do you wish to create a system recovery disk? And you have the ability to create a system recovery disk, CD or DVD, or a flash drive. In there, on that flash drive, you have a number of utilities if you boot off of it.
Okay.
So I'll start booting off the disk then, because that's how I made my recovery disk.
There you go. All right, you're doing a lot of things right, Sam, and thank you for calling in and sharing this particular story, because there are a lot of people, as I said, I put an example of something that I had received, and a lot of other people out there are getting this kind of thing as well. And you've taken a lot of really good steps. So hats off to you, Sam, and thank you very much for giving us a call. The number again, 800-859-0957. Bob, down in Toledo, south of that border. How are you doing, Bob?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
Good, sir. What can we do for you here?
Well, I've got windows. I'm big on graphics. I do a lot of Photoshop, and I spend a lot of time waiting for my machine to catch up. And I've been told that Mac doesn't have that problem, and I just want to hear what you guys have to say about that.
All right, Cal, you get to brag.
What problem are we talking
graphics,
about?
Graphics, about really processing graphics.
He does a lot of Adobe. Are you using the Adobe Premiere Cloud services now?
No, you know, I don't use the cloud. I don't. Okay.
So you just have the standalone Adobe versions that you use?
Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the thing is, you're going to have to repurchase those if you do go to a Mac, right? The licenses are not transferable.
Right, exactly. Well, no, what you can do is you can contact Adobe, and they will give you the ability to cross-license. They'll charge you a small fee to do it, but if you already have the licenses on Windows, they will allow you to cross-license over to the Mac side of the game.
Now, he's asking a question, though. Is it necessarily true that graphics process faster on a Mac than they would on a Windows machine?
Not necessarily.
That's the question.
Well, yeah. It's not necessarily true in the sense that if you had a 5-year-old Mac and a 2-year-old Windows machine and they were fully loaded with memory and appropriate video cards and all that sort of thing, then obviously the newer machine is going to process it better than the older machine. So it's not necessarily the machine brand per se that makes it better.
Or the OS.
It's how it's put together with the OS and the software together that does it.
Right, and plus there's less viruses in a Mac environment. I mean, and you're gonna have less bloatware on a Mac than you would on a PC.
Well, traditionally, a lot of these applications were originally written for the Mac, and then they were ported over to Windows.
Mm-hmm.
The Mac has been, in a tradition, been a machine that handles graphics better. And if I was going to do a choice of either one, obviously I'm going to go with a Mac.
Now, why don't you hang on a second, because we want to come back and maybe talk about some other things as well, Bob, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, hang on the line, and we'll be right back. For the rest of you out there, here's a number for you to call, and we still have a little bit of time to answer your question at 800-859-0957. That's 800-859-0957, waiting to answer you. Let me take a moment here to thank Mike Stett for being our engineer. Thank you so much. And Rich Lozinski, who's been doing the screening and answering calls. That's the pleasant voice that answers the phone. Got time for a couple more calls here at 800-859-0957. We did want to go back to Bob, who was calling us from Toledo. And Bob, you had a question about you do a lot of graphics processing, and your question was which works better, a Windows machine or a Mac? And the Apple platform. And I think in some ways, I'm going to guess what may have driven your question is that I think traditionally, in terms of video processing, that people who do that kind of work have favored the Macs in general. Am I right in that, Cal? That's
well, generally, that's been the platform of choice based upon a long legacy of video being done on the Mac, starting with the Amiga and then branching over to the Apple machines and coming forward.
And you said that, for instance, the software all was born on a Mac platform often and then ported over to or changed over to a Windows machine.
Correct, yes.
Okay. Three things strike me, Bob, and I wanted to tell you this before we go any further, and for other people who are listening. There's nothing magical about one platform over the other, because there's three things that strike me, and guys, correct me if you think I'm wrong on this, but I think one is the graphic card. It's going to probably have to be an independent one on it. It's going to have its own RAM on there if you're doing some really serious kind of graphic work. And Ed, you talked about one you saw that your son got hold of from somebody that had three fans on it.
Yes.
Plus, how many gigabytes of RAM were on the thing?
But that's a gaming computer. I mean, if you want a gaming computer, you can build them.
Yes.
And build them up
on either platform, any platform.
And you're probably better off on the PC because it's cheaper. But if you want something for video editing, it's hard to beat the Mac.
But the graphic card will be a big part of it.
The other difference between the two is that One is pretty much put together to do that situation where with the PC you're going to actually
build it to the type of configuration
you want. Where if you buy a Mac, it's generally going to be set to try and do that sort of thing. The other thing that I think that you're going to find is that you're going to want it, if you're going to do this sort of thing where you're going to be building a computer, you're probably going to want to go more with a desktop unit than a laptop.
Yes.
Because it gives you the flexibility to put in multiple cards, and that's whether you use the Mac or you use the Windows machine.
Yeah. Cal, you mentioned something about Bob. Now, are you doing video or just photographic editing?
I do a lot, mostly photographs, but I do some video.
Now, the other guideline that me and Ed were talking about during break two is whatever you decide to do, whatever software you decide that you want to use to do this editing with, you want to go to that particular software's website and look at their recommendations for what they think is appropriate for doing that with. And they're going to give you baseline recommendations. I always say add 20% above that. So if they say put in 4 gig of RAM, kick it up to 6.
And RAM, I think RAM in particular right now, good RAM is still very cheap right now, comparatively to what it's been in the past.
There are four principles to a computer. You can never have too much memory. You can never have too big of a hard drive. You can't never have too fast of a processor. And you can't have too big of a monitor.
Well, and the other thing and the other thing is if you are thinking about getting a new computer, whether or not it's a PC or a Mac, consider solid state hard drives.
Oh, absolutely.
And even though solid state, you can't get into the terabytes yet, you could still have your operating system installed on the bootable media would be the solid state hard drive. Mm-hmm. And if you went with you wanted terabytes of storage, then you can always get an external or a secondary drive.
Or you can do like I did and just buy a hybrid hard drive where you have, you know, like 128 of solid state, and the rest of it is a 1 terabyte mechanical assembly that's
and that's
in
one
there.
Unit.
I like
it,
that better.
Yeah,
is that one unit?
Yes.
Yeah, you
and
didn't.
Then you just
not
load
that
it
together.
Up appropriately.
Exactly. So what you're hearing, Bob, there as well, is that the type of hard drive you have can also make a big difference. And what Cal has done with the hybrids is that you've got something that will load your operating system and some of the other processes on the front end on the solid state drive, but then you have a huge amount of room for holding the images you create. For instance, if you work with raw data, or if you work with
large video files,
etc.
And what's nice about those is that the hard drive firmware itself will find out which files are being accessed the most, and then automatically swap those into the flash SSD. Portion of the solid state or portion of that hard drive.
Yeah,
Did you have another question, Bob?
No, I'm just listening to you guys talk, and I'm learning here. I'll tell you, because I spend so much time waiting for my software, but it's probably my RAM memory to catch up to what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of things. It could be your processor, for instance. What kind of processor do you have in your computer right now?
I wish I could tell you. I don't know.
Well, the other thing is that if you have a slightly dated computer, if it's more than 4 or 5 years old, then it's time to upgrade.
Yeah.
And then also, you know, one thing that can happen is you might want to check your disk drive for disk errors using the Windows tool, because if your hard drive is starting to experience problems, you know, it'll manifest as a slow and sluggish computer.
Yep. So, Bob, thank you very much for giving us a call like this. You've given us an opportunity to set a couple of things out there that I hope will have helped some other people as well. I've got to tell you guys, this week we had an adventure. Jenny and I, my wife, went to Shane's place, Comptech Services, because we were at a place where we had a little bit of money set aside, and we were able to get her a new computer.
Oh, all those returnables you've been saving.
That's right. Yeah. Right, the big bag of returnables.
you ever see old people at Royal Oak with garbage bag? That's Foster.
That's
the PC fund.
We'll collect to compute.
I interrupted
you.
No,
that was it. That was great. Anyway, we went there, and Shane had what he does have, and other places as well, is he will get these things back from commercial or enterprises. They'll get very, very good machines, and this happened to be an HP EliteBook, which was this very small, like a 12-inch laptop. And I thought, you know, Jenny will never buy this. It's too small. But
yeah.
Gary,
you have had this conversation.
Right.
Yep.
You were so right.
And it's because you thought she wanted a desktop because she's always had a desktop.
There you go. And the big monitor.
Because she wanted to be able to see everything. And what did she do?
She bought a fishbowl.
she bought a 12-inch laptop and loves it.
She loves it. It's funny because the transition,
she
folks.
She finally knows.
Well, the transition has been remarkable because in the past it was like, you know, two or three times they boss, and I had to.
Now she just pulls it. She carries it into you.
That's exactly it.
No, she'll be going fast, but it'll be fast. I dropped it.
No.
I'm up by the pool. Bring it out here.
What she loves about it, and Gary, you have mentioned this before, and I really saw it happen, is the portability.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And she loves the size. One of the things that surprised me.
It never fails.
She loves the touchscreen.
Now, that is interesting because that's. Takes a little bit to getting used to.
And part of it is that she doesn't have to try with the mouse to exactly get to that target. Mm-hmm. When she can just reach up and point on the screen. And I've been surprised, even with my gorilla banana fingers, I can get things to work on this little screen.
That's the reason why I don't use a touch screen, because my fingertips are really big. And I have to, if I do use a touch screen, I use a stylus.
Yeah, I have a stylus, and I use both. Yeah. I use my fingers for a lot of things, but there's times to use a stylus.
Like barbecue.
Now if I have that Windows Metro interface up with those big Fisher-Price icons, then I can use my finger.
No, they're not there on the machine that she's working on. A classic shell on it. But to me, what was fascinating was to see somebody who had been using a desktop for such a long time love this little form factor.
Yeah.
And again, that portability has been a huge, huge factor. Well, folks, thank you very much for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. On Sunday nights, both hours of our program on. You say both hours? Yes. There was an hour before this in which we talked about the Internet of Things with somebody from AT&T. We talked about an award that Visual Compass, Eddie Fritz, had won out there. He had won an Emmy. And we also talked with Doug Kelly about some things that are going on the west side of our state with technology. You'll be able to get that, plus listen to our callers here on this hour of the Internet Advisor.
Happy Father's Day.
That's right. Happy Father's Day to all of you folks out there. And don't forget, next week, back here in time for answering your questions at the Internet Advisor. And if you have one in between time, simply go to internetadvisor.net, click on the Contact Us button, and send us your question. We'll be happy to help you out during the week. Stay tuned for more great programming here on the Great Voice of the Great Lakes, 760 AM WJR.